Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Lee Coker, 14 years of combination experience, a lieutenant on Truck 1 for Whitfield County Fire Department in Georgia. Lee had no ambition of becoming a firefighter, but one of his friends was an explorer at a local volunteer department, which got Lee intrigued. Once he saw what the job entailed, Lee was hooked and never looked back. Lee is as humble as they come and didn't like talking about himself too much in the interview, but once the topic switched to the job, you can clearly see the humility and passion he has for the fire service. With that, I present Mr. Lee Coker.
Hey, I'm Lee Coker, career lieutenant with Whitfield County Fire Department in Georgia. Growing up, wasn't the guy that had any ambitions of being a fireman, so it wasn't like I planned on being a fireman. But when I was 15, one of my best friends joined the Explorer Post here in Dalton, city of Dalton's Explorer Post. And I was like, hey, man, whatever, we can hang out more. I'll go see what it's about. Got down there and pretty much fell in love with the job. So that's when I turned 18, started volunteering with the county. The county had volunteers. So I was like, hey, you know, go volunteer, get some experience, and then I'll come back here and, you know, hopefully be a career fireman. But fell in love with Whitfield County, knew that that was where I wanted to be for my career. And I've been there since 2011. So worked a lot of different places, but was fortunate enough to come back Whitfield County as a career fireman. So
that's it.
That's how I got my start.
All right. For those that don't know, including myself, can you tell us a little bit about Whitfield, the size, how many stations, amount of personnel, things like that?
Yeah. So we're 12 stations, full-time staffing, two truck companies, 12 engines every day, and two battalion chiefs every day. Minimum staffing is two on each. Some have three. Just depends on what station you're at and which three, two, and then the double houses with the trucks and the engines, they have five usually. But population's about 110,000. So.
Okay. And so you're saying your minimum staffing's two, but most of the time you're riding three.
So it's just dependent on the station. Okay. So different stations have their staffing at three, but every piece in the county has a minimum of two on it every day.
Okay.
And we also run squads that are the quick response F-250s. So
gotcha.
They'll be cross-staffed with two on it and one on the engine, or sometimes the engine will shut down. It just depends.
Okay. Okay. And are you guys EMT basics or paramedics?
So we have EMTs and we have paramedics, but there is no requirement. We're just a first responder department. So we're not running a ton of medical calls, mainly just the code three medical calls, but we do have an incentive for EMT and paramedic. So here recently, a bunch of guys are going to get it. That's something we started this year. So, but the minimum's first responder.
Okay. And no transport, I'm assuming.
No transports. It's all private, hospital-based EMS.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. And as far as a first due box within the county limits of Whitfield, what are you guys dropping on your first alarm assignment?
So every structure fire gets five engines, two trucks, and two battalion chiefs. So that's to get us to our 16 personnel on scene.
Gotcha. Okay. And how closely are your stations? Are they, you know, somewhat spaced out pretty good?
So it just depends on the area of the county. Some are closer than others, but usually you're looking at your second due after the first due gets on the scene, anywhere 3 to 6 minutes. And that's dependent, you know, obviously closer in, towards the center of the county. It's more tightly packed. And there are stations when you get to the borders that you're going to be on top of each other. But anything that's on the outlying parts of the county, like stations 5 and 10, those stations are way out on the borders of the counties. So they're going to be there by themselves for a decent bit of time.
Okay. And who do you guys, who surrounds Whitfield? Like, do you're in mutual aid with what other departments?
Yeah, so we auto aid with Catoosa County, Walker County, Gordon County, and those are all the counties around us, and then auto aid with the City of Dalton.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Let me see. I want to make sure I got all the questions. Oh, and last question. I'm assuming engines do engine work, trucks do truck work. You guys are pretty much, you know, it's apparatus dependent.
Really, I mean, our engines are doing just as much truck work as our trucks. When you look at it, as we have 12 engines, and like I said, 5 engines on every fire, and we got 2 trucks. In my response area, where my truck is, we're covering half the county, so there may be 4 engines there before we even get there. So
okay.
You can't really depend on the truck to do your search or ventilation. If you are, you're waiting 15 minutes. So we really, it's really company officer discretion, battalion chief discretion. Not rare for our second view is traditionally assigned search on every fire. So usually third view will catch water supply, and that's shift and officer dependent. But a lot of the times we're still doing truck work off of our engines.
Gotcha. Okay. And roughly, what's your call volume yearly?
A little over 6,000.
Okay. All right. Sounds like and you said you guys are close to Dalton. So do you have any firefighters that are, because Dalton is the home of the Georgia Smoke Divers. So do you have any guys that participate in that and try to bring it back to Whitfield?
No, we actually had a guy go through when he was with the county, and he works for the city now. So,
okay.
Yeah, super proud of him.
Awesome. Okay. All right. Now I'm going to kind of go back a little bit. You know, you mentioned earlier, really no ambition to be a firefighter until, you know, one of your friends was an explorer and you checked it out and you fell in love with it. So once you got into that, you know, what I would say the love for the job, I'm assuming you went and found a volunteer department to, you know, get your skills on, in a sense.
Yeah, so growing up, my dad retired as a police officer 30 years. So I've always been around public safety. And the friend I was telling you about is Cody Riddell. He works at Whitfield right now, but his dad was a fireman at the City of Dalton. So that was where I kind of got tied into that. But I mean, I lived in the county. So counties always had volunteers back then. We don't have volunteers anymore. But back then we had volunteers, heavy volunteer presence. And I started there with the plans to just get some experience to get a career job, and fell in love with it. And I knew that's where I wanted to be. So actually, that's where I'm working at the station I started volunteering at. So,
oh, okay.
Kind of like home. That's the best way I can describe it, is when I came to the county, I knew I was home. Like the guys, the culture, just felt like home.
Understood.
So I knew that's where I wanted to be.
Okay. So if I got this right, are you saying Whitfield kind of absorbed all those volunteer stations and pretty much turned it career?
Yeah, so they were all Whitfield County stations, but they had it was more volunteers than full time. And then about in 2016, which is when I got hired in 2016 full time at Whitfield, and they did a big hire that year and hired like 18 guys. And then the next year, I think it was another 16 or so, and basically hired all the volunteers that pretty much wanted to have a job. They hired them. And that's when our staffing really went, because back then we were running, some stations were still one man station and relying on volunteers. And that's where we got our 2-man minimum at every station, was just throughout the years hiring more and more. And eventually we hired all the volunteers, and you know, it's hard to get volunteers anyway now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So with that being said, you get hired full time where you want to be. Home is home. Going from volunteer to career, did you see any difference really?
Yeah, I mean, not really, because we were still. So I got hired, got assigned to a station just north of where I live. It actually borders Station One where I was volunteering at. So I was a career firefighter, still in the same relative area of the county, but I was a full-time engineer, and we still had volunteers. So I got hired when we still had volunteers. So it was still kind of that volunteer atmosphere. You had dudes showing up. They had tons of people running calls. Back then, we had good turnout on volunteers. But yeah, I mean, I knew everybody already. So,
Okay. So I'm gonna ask you, this is kind of a newer question that I've been asking the guests here recently. So what is your definition of professionalism?
yeah, so I love the clean pressed uniforms, looking good in Nomex, but I don't think it makes you a professional. I think, looks is a part of it, but really it comes down to skill and, do you love the job? I think anybody can be a professional. I mean, this is our profession, this is my career. I don't want to do anything else. I plan on being here for the long haul. So I think we've got to treat it as a profession, what it is, not as our part-time job that we come get a rest day from our other job. And that's what I always tell the guys that work with me. I mean, you can have your hobbies be into what you want to be, but when you're here, I need you 100% here. We're not planning our next fishing trip or hunting trip. We're still working. We got a job to do. And that's what I see as a professional. Like, you can have fun. Obviously, we all love to come to work at the fire department, but we got to be professionals. We got to be here for the people. That's pretty much the best I got.
Hey, I love it, dude. I love that answer 100%. I wish we had more individuals that thought of it that way and that don't use the time when they show up to work as quote unquote a day off. You know what I mean? It's like,
Yeah.
this is not really a day off. Like, what are we doing here? We're supposed to be. The best way I can say it, I was talking to a buddy of mine and he was like, if you're gonna come here, because I get it, everyone has a life, everyone has hobbies and things that they got to do. But at least between the hours, at least at minimum, between the hours of 8 and 5, like let's be firemen. After that, sure, if you got to go do something, you got to do it. But when you come in, first thing is, hey, I need to work on this. That's not related to the organization that's paying your paychecks. That's where there's a problem.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the thing. I mean, I love having those passionate guys that you don't even have to, they come in and, it's 10 o'clock at night and you hear something in the bay and you go out there and, they got the saws off the truck or they're throwing ladders and, I love that kind of culture in my stations.
Absolutely. Okay. With that being said, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, aggressive for me, I mean, I think it's a term that gets thrown around a lot. And there's both sides of it. Some people view it as, we're aggressive firemen, we're good. And then others are, kind of shying away from it, using it as a crutch. Oh, you shouldn't be aggressive. But to me, aggressive is calculated. And my aggressive might look different than someone else, but I train to my aggressive level. If I'm doing something, it's not reckless because it's not the first time I've done it. And it's, I think that's the thing people get caught up with is they see something, and just because this crew's doing it doesn't make it reckless. They're probably safer doing that than another crew is that's not done any training on it. I think it's just crew and person dependent. And luckily, I think, with aggressive, I think social media has done a good job of connecting guys, to kind of say it's okay to love this job and train hard and get a little out there. Luckily in my department, we never really had the I call it the safety culture that the, we're first. When I was coming up in the fire department, and especially in Whitfield, it was never about, our expectations were clear that we were going to go inside and fight fire. It wasn't, firemen first and then everybody else. Obviously, we're taking care of our firemen, but we didn't really have that handicapped so many departments, I feel like.
Right.
And that's what I'm saying is, social media, I think, has done a good job of connecting those guys out there and getting like-minded people together to kind of push back against that, and put the citizen first.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so at what point in your career did you decide to go for that lieutenant spot? I mean, because it sounds like, you got hired, and then I remember you stating earlier you were an engineer for period of time, and then now you're a lieutenant. So
Yeah.
if you could kind of describe, those steps, going into those roles.
Yeah. So I was working as a career fireman when I got hired, and I got hired in as an engineer because we really didn't do firefighter positions. The Whitfield needed drivers. I was already at my other department, kind of like a relief driver, had my NPQ certification for apparatus operator. So when I got hired, I was hired in as an engineer. So volunteered as a fireman, got hired as an engineer, and I promoted quickly. Like, I was an engineer for I think it was 17 months or something like that. Then I got promoted to lieutenant, and it's a tested process. So I tested for it. I had a lieutenant at the time I was talking to him. I'm like, man, I'm happy here. Like, I'm enjoying working with you. Having a great time being an engineer. And at this point, I had in total about 5 years of experience, 5 or 6 years of experience. And he just told me, he's like, look, man, you're not always going to work with me. Like, you might be having a good time right now, but you got to start looking at your future. Like, who do you want to work for? Is it going to be better? Are you going to be better to work for than, if at least if you promote, you're working for yourself. And that was what kind of really got me, because I was like, man, he's right. Like, I'm comfortable. I'm having a good time. I'm enjoying my lieutenant, my crew, but that could change at the drop of a dime. So that's when I decided to take the test, got promoted, and went to one of our slowest stations we have as a brand new lieutenant. And my driver was twice my age. So really, he helped me out a lot. But I've always told everybody, like, I've been a lieutenant now for 7 years, and I always say I wish I knew as much now as I thought I knew when I first got promoted. Like, I thought I knew a lot more than I did, and I'm like, man, if I only knew as much as I did, as much as I thought I did.
All right.
So yeah, worked at the slow station for a while, and then moved Station One, and been in busy houses ever since.
Okay. What are a couple pieces of advice you can give out to anybody that's looking to either go into an officer role or newly promoted in one? We always go back to if we knew now what we should have known back then, we could have changed different things about ourselves. But what pieces of advice would you give?
Man, I think it's just humility. When you promote, especially promoting young, you're looked at with a different lens automatically anyway, but you have to be humble enough to admit that you don't know everything. And like I was saying with my first driver, he was twice my age, had way more experience than I had, but that was that conversation we had when we got there. It's like, look, I don't know everything. You don't know everything, but if we put our heads together, we're going to figure this out. And he helped me along a lot. But yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is finding those people that you can emulate as an officer. We all know you have good examples of officers. You have bad examples of officers, and you can learn just as much from both of them. But probably the biggest thing is to find those guys that are running their crews like you want to run your crew, and just listen to them. Be humble enough to hear them out. And know that your idea always isn't the best idea.
No, that's a fact. The humility part, I think humility goes a long way, man. Like I said, because it's especially with what we do in this day and age, the fire service is ever evolving. There's no way we can know everything under the sun. And if you're an officer and you think that, hey, it's my job to, I have to know all this, like, no, like everybody has strengths and weaknesses. The whole point of finding a crew is you always have at least one person that will know a little bit more about something that you don't know. And if it's a person that's not the officer, like, it's okay, because we all, like I said, there's just so much information that we have to retain out in this fire service. It's crazy.
Absolutely. Yeah, I defer all the time to my crew on stuff, and that's conversations we have. I'm like, I can't know everything, and I'm not going to be the best at everything, but if y'all are the best at it, that's what I want y'all to be, and I'm going to send people to y'all for it. If it's got something to do with the ladder truck, I send one to my driver. I'm like, hey, that ain't even my truck. He's the one driving it every day. He knows everything about it. Go talk to him. And I think that's okay. You got to have that. You got to building crews is the thing about being an officer. I think that's the most satisfaction is building a good crew. And I've always told my guys, like, I want when we pull up and they hear us check on scene, I want everybody to breathe a sigh of relief and say, man, they're here. We can give them the hard jobs. From the incident commander, everybody, they know that we're there to work.
Absolutely. Okay. And so with Whitfield's situation, as far as your manpower, how do you try to balance having to do more with less? Because if you're riding minimum staffing that day, if you arrive first on whatever incident, you're given the size up and then you're going to work. You're not waiting for the next company that's coming to arrive. So like if you can describe to us, because I say that because there are organizations that are able to have the manpower pool where the officer just pretty much does officer work. They talk on the radio, they give a size up, direct point, command, that. But with your situation, you're having to do that, maybe pull a line, maybe grab the medical bag, and maybe set up for whatever extrication, whatever the case may be. So how much more difficult is that with you having to do more with less?
Yeah, I mean, it is a challenge because if I'm riding like with my station, I usually have five guys between two trucks, a truck and an engine. That's ideal. I mean, I can work with that because I can have a driver pump in the truck and then I got four guys, including myself, ready to go to work. But that's situational, right? So like fires, we're all working and one of the drivers is probably outside, getting their own water, they're stretching a second line, something of that nature. But we're able to pretty effectively get the search and fire attack done with our two crews. And usually my 360 report is directed to the battalion chief because by the time he gets there, I'm already going to be inside. So when I get my 360 report, I'm hollering at the battalion, giving him that 360, and then I'm going to work. But the difference is, you compare that and contrast it to one of the stations we were talking about, like the outlying stations. They don't have that luxury of the guys like I have. And, I've been in their shoes. When I first got promoted, I was at the slow station and it was me and one other guy, and our next closest unit was 6 minutes away. But we would, there were situations where we were both fighting fire. We were both inside trucks pumping itself. And you'll hear a lot of that around here, especially as the truck will pump itself. So it's you got to do what you got to do,
No,
It's
no.
unfortunate. I mean, manpower dictates, probably not the best, but the guys are good at making it work.
Exactly.
But when we have an extrication though, especially on my truck or something like that, I can kind of step back and let my guys handle it and let them take ownership of the task. And that's when I get to stand back more and kind of run command and, look for the safety stuff. So, yeah, it's a mix.
And I'm sure, with you being fortunate where at the station you're at, when you do find yourself standing back and watching them go to work, communicate, they're all communicating, everyone's on the same page. That's got to be a great feeling knowing, hey, not saying you had a hand in their skills, but you had a hand in shaping that crew where everything's working fluidly.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the proud dad moment where you get to sit back and you're watching them hit home runs, and that whether you're there or not, it's gonna get done. That's always been my goal is remove me from the crew and nothing changes. Whether I'm there or not, on shift or I took a day off, it's still the same thing. They don't need me there. That's what I like to build is I want my crew to be able to operate without me. And it is, you get proud of the guys that are taking ownership of the task.
I'm sure. I'm sure. And I've interviewed several guys that have said the same thing, where they'll be off and then they'll have an incident, and then the relieving officer or officer for the day will call or text that individual and go, "Hey, we had this." I didn't have to tell them anything. Like, it's amazing. And I'm sure that's a great feeling to get, knowing that even if the leader's not there, the crew's still doing what they have to do as if the leader is. Like, it's
Yeah.
nothing skipped.
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm gonna hit on the topic of recruitment and retention. What do you feel like the fire service is doing good on, and where do you see that we're falling short that we can improve on when it comes to those topics?
Yeah, I mean, obviously recruitment and retention is a hot topic. I've got to witness it firsthand at Whitfield. There's been a ton of great strides at Whitfield alone. We've got this pathway program where guys and girls in high school can get their firefighter two. They're graduating high school with fire one, fire two. Like I would have loved to had that opportunity when I was in high school. And they're even doing the EMT pathway where you're getting EMT in high school, fire one, fire two. The minute they graduate, if we have positions open, they can come hop in our recruit class and, go through recruit class, but they're already certified. I think that's a huge opportunity to get them in, give people a choice besides college and show them, this kind of work is available. But one of the biggest things that I've seen, and it kind of transcends generations, is like with me, all my friends are firemen. For the most part. And we all started in the same way. So I've got, four guys that were really close friends of mine, me and three others that went through the Explorers, started at the county at the same time, and were all career lieutenants at the county. So, right there, it's kind of like you're connected, we all joined at the same time and it's the same friend group. And now I'm seeing that with others. We just hired probably last year, we had one guy go through recruit class. The next class, one of his friends is in it. And then the class after, another friend's in it. So, I think that's the important thing is you're building that. If guys are coming in that are already friends outside of the fire department and then they're working together at the fire department, how much harder is it to leave? Leave your friends, leave your boys. It's harder to let the little things bother you when you're saying, man, all my friends are here. They're all going through the same thing and we're going to get through it together. So I think the fire service definitely has to look at that. I think our best recruitment is our members, because all that boils down to is one of them started and he told his friend, like, man, this is the coolest job ever. And then he told another, and now it's just spiraled out and you've got all those ties that bind right there. So,
No,
and that,
absolutely.
that's recruitment, but that's also retention, because your friends are here. But yeah, I think that's what we're doing good as far as the fire service.
Okay. And if outside of recruitment and retention, where do you see some things that we can improve on to make the service better for us?
As far as
As far as any other, like, we're going to take out recruitment and retention. What's one thing you feel like, the fire service can do better on as a whole?
Man, that's a tough one. Obviously our benefits, that's recruitment and retention, but a lot of places are cutting pensions, and benefits in general. But I think the thing we can do better on is just getting our name out there. As a fire service, I think that's going to help us all. Because I run into so many people that they don't even know what the firemen do. They think we're just sitting around, and I don't think the fire service has ever countered that myth. I think we do a good job amongst ourselves of, showing off our work, posting pictures of ourselves doing training and stuff like that. But that's just for other firemen to see. We're just showing each other what we're doing, and we're talking about training, we're talking about fighting fire, we're talking tactics, strategies. But we're not good PR people. Like, people still think we're sitting around the station, and some of them don't even know that we're full-time firemen as a fire service as a whole.
Right.
So I would definitely say what the fire service can do better is market itself.
No, you're right. You're
But
right.
then the humility comes in. Everybody's humble, but sometimes you got to put yourself out there.
No, you're right. You're right. Because it's funny, you'll walk through the grocery store and somebody will be like, "Well, who's paying for it?" They'll be like, "Oh, is your department paying for your dinner?" And you're like, "No, sir. Like we all pitch in and pay for ourselves." Or the best one I hear is, "What are you guys just doing? Sitting at the station playing cards, waiting on a call to come out?" And it's like, "No, not really." But okay, I mean, that's what you think. But you're right. We need to do a better job at marketing ourselves. You're absolutely right. As far as realistic training, the topic is realistic training on a small budget. I'm not sure what the budget for Whitfield County is as far as training, but what do you do for your members when they show up ready to go on shift?
So we have a really good recruit program. Over the past few years, we've really stepped up our recruit training. So not they get the fire one and fire two, but more importantly, we're giving them the real world application. We're not teaching somebody and having to tell them, well, when you get out in the field, it's not like this. So we've really, and that's a culture thing that we've had to make strides on, especially our training division was making strides on. We're not saying, hey, we're going to show you the real way when you get out. Like, 'cause I mean, everywhere you go, that's what people, oh, we'll teach you this and then we'll show you the real way. So let's just cut out and teach you the real way, So our recruit classes, they're putting out some really phenomenal firemen. But we have a interior search and rescue program that we do. We started it back in 2018. Our search culture was a little lacking back then, but not really. It was out of necessity. When you have one or two dudes on the truck, they're not really the easiest is to fight fire, right?
Right.
So when we started getting that in 2016, we started getting the bigger hires. We're staffing with two. Some stations are getting three. We added two more stations, so we took out some of those big coverage gaps. So trucks are getting there sooner. And the beauty of it was, is we started teaching interior search and rescue as a department, a 3-day class. So we were doing interior search and rescue and firefighter survival in 3 days. And we were teaching a lot of the oriented search stuff where we had been doing, right and left-hand searches. We still teach that, but we're doing a lot of oriented search. We did a lot of training, and it was great to see guys kind of come out with those skills and start practicing them in the real world. So, but even in that program, we'll do to make it more realistic on a budget. Everybody does the Denver drill. I'm pretty sure most departments are doing the Denver drill, but how many times are you doing it in smoke? A lot of times you got the prop, you're out there, set the prop up outside, you get a few walkthroughs in, and then you do it, maybe breathing air. But just taking some salvage covers, putting it under a shed or beside two Connex boxes. Stretch a salvage cover over and hit it with a smoke machine and get that little bit more difficult rep in, like doing that. But as far as for my crew, I like to do a lot of stuff. We'll do drills. I do a drill where, especially for driver operators, we'll take and we'll simulate where there's a piece of equipment missing, right? So we're going to start flowing water and I'm going to have a hydrant nearby where they're supposed to be getting water supply, but maybe we'll take an adapter out that they're used to doing, or maybe we'll move a section of fill hose that they would probably do to try and build in that troubleshooting, just the problem solving on the fly. And that's what I think is most important for drivers is being able to troubleshoot and problem solve, because a lot of times they're going to be out there by themselves. So hopefully that makes sense, what I was trying to
No,
say.
absolutely, absolutely. And one of the questions I'd like to ask you is, if you are on a department that doesn't have like the greatest search culture, What ways can you go about trying to improve that? Because I think a lot of departments, maybe out there are falling a little short when it comes to having a better search culture and letting the chiefs allow us to do things that they might see as, we've never done it this way. They're a little fearful.
Yeah, so and that's the thing is, our search culture back then, prior to the big hirings and the manpower was a lot of get on the nozzle, fight fire, and then searching off the hose line. So what we were doing is we were seeing, and this was really started at the company level, the company officer level, and the class was put together by company officers. So we just kind of identified like, hey, we're seeing engines get on scene to where they could be doing a search, but we're used to the volunteer days where everybody's going to fight fire. And now we're having battalion chiefs. So it was a lot of changes all at once. A lot of things fell in place. But really the biggest thing is to ease up. If you have a chief, I feel like a battalion, whatever, that's maybe the search culture isn't as strong in your department. This is just opinion, but is there a way for you to show them that you can do it? Are they hesitant because they haven't seen it, or and they don't know if you're actually capable? Because anybody can watch a video and say, "Hey, man, I want to do this," but you got to instill that confidence in your chiefs just as much as your crew. Like, hey, we've trained on it, we're good with it. And that was the biggest thing for us, and it was so great to see is the guys would get there on scene and they'd run up to the chief like, hey man, can we go search? Can we do a search? Like everybody wanted to be assigned search because they had been trained and they knew what they were doing. And everybody knew that everybody in the department was going to search and they were comfortable searching and they were trained and had practiced it. It wasn't their first time searching. So, and I forgot one thing on the realistic training that I was going to bring up. How many times have you searched a house and not found anybody, right?
All right.
Probably more than you have found somebody.
Right.
So one thing that we do in our training is we'll have a search and they'll find nothing. Like they'll be searching an empty building, no hose dummies, nothing. And they won't know it till they come out and you ask them, hey, did you find anything? And they're like, no. And then the answer you're looking for is, are you sure? And they're, yeah, absolutely. I didn't miss anything. Just to instill that confidence because these guys are going to go out and they're going to search houses and they're going to find nothing. The majority of time, they're not going to find anything.
I like that. I do like that outlook of it. Okay. Because I took a class recently, a Sean Duffy search class, and one of the rooms or one of the scenarios, me and my partner, because we were in teams of two, me and my partner searched, and we came out of the building, and they were like, "Was your search good?" And I'm like, "Search clear, negative." And I'm like, kind of looking at him, and he's looking at me, and he's like, "Are you sure?" And I'm like, "Yeah." I'm like, "But was it supposed to be negative?" And he's like, "Yes." But you know what I mean? Like, it
Yep.
gives you that sense of like, did I miss something? But it was like, no. He was like, "No, we did not put anything in there. Like, you're good." So I do like that twist that you put on there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that 3 day class, by the end of the 3 days, our hopeful is that there's no, yes, I'm sure, there's no hesitation.
Right. And that's awesome that you did that, because I think it's one of those things. Whenever you have an organization that's not used to something, like, change is fearful. Firemen don't really like change, but I look at it, if you have like for instance, my truck, we're fortunate where we're riding five most days. A lot of times four, but still, the days that we have five, like, I feel I'd like to see our company be allowed to split. Like, you have two go to the roof to ventilate, and then the other two going in conducting a search. Like, there's no point of having all four of us sticking together to watch one person cut the saw, one person open up the roof when two other people are just there. Like, if we're all about time, to me, if you can flood the scene and hit it hard with your manpower, there should be no issues. Fire goes out, searches are being done simultaneously.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay. I'm going to switch topics to outside training. Are you a proponent for that?
Absolutely. So I'm fortunate to live in Georgia, where we got, in my opinion, the best bang for your buck fire conference, the Metro Atlanta Firefighters Conference, MAFC. If you've never been, I would recommend going to it 10 out of 10 times. I look forward to it every year. It's coming around. But yeah, I remember I was, we went to, this was back in like 2020. Me and another guy went to County Fire Tactics down in
Oh, Florida.
Pensacola Beach. I think it was the Pensacola Beach Benefit Conference or something. I've been back there twice since then. And I actually got a scholarship from Mercedes Hose to go to their to go to CFT's Officer Development Program last year, I think 2023, February 23. So yeah, I'm a huge proponent of outside training. I've always enjoyed going, and I think, you know, if you're not getting it at your department, outside training is probably the second best thing you can get, especially for networking. You know, in our time, you know, this is 2025 now. Like, there's no excuse not to be able, at the drop of, you know, a hat, to pick up your phone and connect with somebody that may have an answer that you need or you don't know. And networking with those guys at the conferences is probably the best thing you can get.
That's for sure. That's for sure. And like you said earlier, if you're not getting what you need from your department, because there are things that you can control. There are only certain things you can't control. You can't control the call volume of your organization or the number of working structure fires. But if you can get out, find the nearest conference that can give you those live evolutions under live fire, those sets and reps that you're looking for, you can take all that back to your organization, go, hey, listen, this is what I've learned, to anybody that's willing to hear it. And there's no greater feeling to me. Outside training is like a huge reset button mentally for that stimulates firemen to, okay, like, it's okay to love this job.
Absolutely, especially when you leave and you're more excited to get back to work. You know, you're like, I can't wait to get back to work and try some of this and tell people this. Yeah, it's great. And if you're going to outside training, bring somebody with you. Bring two people with you. You know, that's how you make change. You know, you can say it all day long, but sometimes it takes showing somebody else that they don't know saying it, you
Right.
know?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. All right. I'm going to switch to a leadership topic. Company officer, chief officer, it doesn't matter. But in your opinion, what is leadership? And when you personally decided to go for that lieutenant's position, what kind of leader did you want to become?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to be a leader, obviously, but really, I feel like I can't call myself a leader, because I feel like leadership is not a self-given term. I think the only people that can say that you are a leader are your peers and those around you. So I do think leadership is an interesting art form. I think it's more of an art than a science, and it's ever evolving, right? So when I started, I was like, I got promoted and leadership really wasn't on my mind. Like, I never said, oh, I'm going to be this great leader. I just thought, oh, I'm just going to be a lieutenant. I'm a company officer. And but as I've went on, I've really tried to make a concentrated effort to be a better leader, to try and learn. And I think, you know, you watch other people's example. You can read books, you can do all this stuff, but to me, leadership really comes down to doing the right thing and treating people right. I think as long as you do those two things, you can pretty much do anything. You know, get anybody to follow you want. If they see that you have good character, good morals, and you're not going to get them killed, that's when you've made it.
That's fact. And it probably doesn't, oh, I'm sorry. It probably does help that, you going down to a CFT leadership conference. I've never been to one of those, but I'm assuming you learned lots of good tips and tricks from, the fire service best that go down there and preach the word of leadership.
Absolutely. Especially if I could give any tips to anybody that's wanting to develop their their leadership. It is to get on the conference and podcast, man. Like in our hand, in our cell phone, we have access to some of the greatest leaders that probably have ever existed. You know, I listen to podcasts on the way to work. I listen to them driving it anywhere I'm driving. I'm listening to podcasts. And like you were saying, the conference and my opinion, podcasts, because if you can't make it to the conference, you can listen to a podcast and hear generally a lot of the same stuff and learn from these guys that you probably wouldn't have an opportunity to.
Definitely, definitely. Especially in this day and age where, you know, I understand everyone has different financial situations, but any of the podcasts out there are a way where you can absorb and hear that information that's being spread out at the conferences to a certain extent. But it's better than nothing. It's better than just sitting there working on hunting stuff or your hobbies instead of actually like trying to, you know, figure out what's going on in today's job, in today's fire service. As far as communication, it's my opinion that the greatest fire departments always have the best communication from the top down to the bottom and vice versa. So, what does communication mean to you, in your opinion?
So I think just a saying that I've always said is in the absence of information, firefighters are going to make their own reality. Like if you notice the less information you give them, the more rumor there will be. Like it can be something so minuscule, you know, and I'm saying firefighters in general is anybody that's not a chief, but the less information they have, the more the rumor mill is going to fly, especially, you know, shift change, kitchen table talk. When you start hearing the, did you hear about this? And they're like, no, what? Well, my chief, my battalion told me this. And they're like, really? And then they're going to sit there for 24 hours and make up whatever, you know, piece all this different information together. And then they're going to come up with this grand thing that's probably not even halfway relevant. And I feel like a lot of that can be avoided with an email. I'm a huge fan of emails and stuff like that. Like just send it out on an email. And it's in black and white, and that's what it is. There's no room for interpretation. But I do agree with you. I think some of the best fire departments have the best communication.
Definitely, definitely. And I, to me, it's one of those things I can't understand where, and I'll always have to say this, like I understand when it comes to personnel and like HR issues, yes, you know, that information should not be spread out to the department. I 100% agree with that. But things that can affect the department in certain ways, not personnel, but just things in nature that surround the organization. I think instead of holding that in as a secret, because like you have certain chief officers out there who get a kick out of, well, I know something that the department doesn't know. And instead of spreading it, they hold it, you know, for anticipation, you know, as the rest of the department is hearing rumblings and waiting. And it's like, what is the point of that? That's how you get those rumors flying about when you don't relay the information.
Yeah, for sure. That's not productive at all.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Kind of a different topic because this was mentioned, you know, by Christian, that he also mentioned that you had a article published here recently. So what kind of sparked that? Because like, it's great, you know, like you said with social media, man, there's different cadre groups and different Facebook pages that are always asking really good questions from firefighters, and firefighters are always answering them back. Most of the time, like some of them are like really well thought out. So how did that whole thing come about? Did you ever see yourself writing an article and getting it published?
No, not really. I had started getting some of the guys, the newer, less than 2 year guys together at my station. And we kind of did this formal, more informal development group type thing where I had them write out 1, 5, or it was like 1, 3, and 5 year goals. And we were meeting once a month and kind of tracking progress. It's kind of like a just this group where they could get together and bounce ideas off each other. Because we do have some slower stations, and I wanted to do something to pull those guys in where, if they're at station 10, but all the other firefighters are over here, at least once a month or once every couple months, get them together where they can talk and, share experiences and work on planning for the future. Not necessarily promotions, but more self-development, like, hey, MAFC's coming up, who's going to carpool? So I was looking at it and I was like, man, if I'm here getting these guys to write down their goals, what am I doing? Like, I have goals too. And that's what really sparked it was I was like, man, I can sit here and try and get these guys to, reach for the sky all they want. But, I'd kind of thought maybe I wanted to write an article. So I was like, well, who am I to try and push these guys to be better and not do something myself? So I just sat down and started calling some people at the, whoever would answer at the magazines. And I was like, hey man, what do you got to do to get published? Like, what does it look like to write an article? And I bounced some ideas off of them, and I was telling them about the one that ended up getting published, and he was like, man, I've never even heard of that. I was like, yeah, it's just something I do with my crew. And he's like, well, write an article about that, send it in, and we'll see what we can do. So that was in like January, and it just got released in December. So super interesting process. Kind of got to put yourself out there, but the whole like the cliche of you can't grow in comfort. So just wrote it and put it out there for the world to see.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. And another key attribute I just heard you say is the fact that you're not going to ask any of your firefighters to do something that you wouldn't do. And to me, that is such a, I don't want to say lost trait, but there are officers out there who forget that. Like, it's easy to point direct, I need this done. I 100% understand lieutenant, cap, chief, whatever the case may be. But there's something about when the guys or gals can see you with them as well, as they say, in the trenches or whatever you want to look at it. Like, to me personally, that's what makes me go harder for my officer is the fact that, hey, he's not just telling us to do this and he's inside or she's inside. It's he or she is out here with us, sweating, putting in the work.
Yeah. And that could be something as simple as rolling hose, right? Like officers can roll hose. Like I always, I'll have guys run up like, here, let me get that. And I'm like, I didn't get disabled when I got a red helmet. Like I can still work. Like, I think some people treat their red helmet as a disability. Like, no, can't work no more. But, that's me, man. I think anybody can do the hard jobs.
I like
Or the
that.
not hard jobs, just not the glamorous jobs. Still can clean bathrooms, still can roll hose.
That's awesome. That's awesome. The red helmet didn't give me a disability. I like that saying. I like that saying. All right. I want to go talk about wellness and truly being there for one another. The fire service here recently too. I'm sure you know because you're in the Georgia area. Next rung, Blake Stinnett. He had his incident, but it just showed how much the fire service showed that brotherhood when it was time to step up, and they stepped up. So, in your opinion, your experience, what does wellness and truly being there mean to you?
Yeah, man, I think that's the fire service that we're all longing for, right? Like we hear about, man, back in the day, the brotherhood this and the brotherhood that. The only people we have to blame is ourselves for losing that. Mine and your generations, and then the ones below us, and maybe the one right before us. Because you hear these romanticized stories about how the fire service was, and I've always just sat here and thought, well, what happened? Like, why can we not do it now? And I think with a good concentrated effort, I think you're seeing it, and it may not be in every department, but overall, like you were saying, with that these guys are from everywhere reaching out, helping. That's the brotherhood we're all longing for, and maybe it's not something that you can see them and go to their house, but you can help out and share the message. That's to me, that's wellness right there. Like, I feel like we're making great progress on bringing that back, that we all the time are talking about the brotherhood. I've heard the brotherhood's dead for so long, but look at, like you were talking about with Blake Stinnett and all that. To me, the brotherhood's well and alive.
Absolutely.
And I
Absolutely.
think locally you can see that too. I mean, I had to move houses. I sold my house and I had probably 10 firemen helping me move. Like, I had a guy message me like, "Hey man, I heard you're moving. Can I come help?" Like, that's what it's all about. That's being there for each other,
Definitely.
So, I
No,
mean, it doesn't
I
just have to
agree.
be about the mental health. I mean,
Yes.
being there for someone is, they broke their leg, go mow their yard. One thing that our local does is when someone has a baby or an ailment or something, they set up a meal train for them, and you got guys that are taking them food, and you think about, having a new baby, how much stress that takes off if you have somebody bring you dinner. So I love it, man. I'm loving seeing the fire service where it's at right now. I think we can only go up from here if we got good people, like-minded individuals working together.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. That's well said. Well said. I always kind of like to ask this question towards the end of the interview, and I always like to preface it by saying, like, to you, this is not like a boasting or a show off question, but I truly believe we all have goals in life, hopefully. So with that being said, where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it up? And I know you got a long time, but I always just kind of like to ask the guests, their aspirations and their goals.
Yeah, I mean, man, I used to think I wanted to be the fire chief, but the higher lieutenant level, looking at it, I'm like, man, I don't know. That doesn't look like too much fun. But I'm not naive to think, I'd love to do this for the next 23 years riding a fire truck. But I think that's one of those things is you gotta know where the department needs you at, right? I am in no hurry to promote. Our next step for me would be, we don't have captains right now. We have battalion chief. So I would honestly like to just stay as a lieutenant for as long as possible. And then probably my end goal would be that ops chief job where I'm still over in operations. Because operations is that's what I love. Like, I love being a fireman. No desire to be in training, fire marshal's office, nothing like that. Just pure fireman. So, but I've got 23 years to go, and maybe even more if I wanted to. So who knows what it brings. I don't see myself wanting to be retired completely, like, but that's a long time away.
And a lot and a lot and a lot can change within 23 years. Your department might go, hey, we want to start a captain's process and get captains in place and things like that. So I always just like to ask the guests, but I mean, I like how your outlook at it. You're like, right now, lieutenant spot's where I'm at. I want to be good at it. And then at the end, maybe operations, but at the end of the day, you are still a lieutenant who remembers where he came from, remembers that just because you have a different color helmet doesn't put you above the rest of your crew, and you're always trying to strive and better yourself. And to me, the biggest thing that you have is the humility. And I understand what Christian, when he sent the email, I see it. Like, you have that humility, man. So never change that about yourself.
Man, I appreciate it. That was what I was tossing around, even, like, man, should I even be on here? Like, I even called a couple of my friends, like, man, what do you think? Like, I don't know about this. Like, I'm just a regular guy. Like, and that's what I told them. I'm like, I don't know. Like, just a fireman. And I didn't really write down any answers or nothing that people were like, even Christian was like, hey, did you prepare for it or anything? I'm like, man, this is what I talk about at shift change and at the kitchen table. Like, if I have to prepare, I don't even need to be there.
I love it. You kept it organic, you kept it natural. But one of the things I always like to state to you and anybody listening, if you are obviously you I'm trying to how to say this. So obviously Christian sees something in you Granted that you may know, like, hey, yeah, this is how I present myself, and it's just me. But to somebody else from the outside looking in, it's like, hey, this individual has got the mindset, the intelligence, the humility about themselves. Like, they should be on whatever so other people can hear it. And that's exactly what he did, and that's exactly what you're doing. So, like, I hear that a lot. You know, why me? Are you sure? Like the names of people that you had on there, everybody has something that they have to bring to the table. Everybody. I don't care if you're the 6 month person to 20 something years on the job. As long as you're positively contributing to the fire service, you're trying to make yourself and those around you better. Those are the people that others need to hear, because maybe, just maybe, we might change the culture of the ones who don't see the job the way we do. Like, damn, I've been living this life as a volunteer or a career this way, and it's not right. Like, I need to change. So that's why I always love having guests like you on here to talk about what this job really means to you.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
I mean, you said it earlier. You went to another place, you came back, where you're at's home. That's where you started, and now you're a career fireman doing what you love. That's the whole point of it. So I gotta say to Christian Rivas, man, thank you. Lee, thank you for accepting the invite. I love your tips, your nuggets that you're dropping out there. The red helmet, this isn't a disability. I have never heard that, and I like it, because it's true. Just because you're an officer doesn't mean you don't have to do less of things. It actually means you have to do more, and you need to show your crew, like, hey, I'm still in it with you guys. So I just want to say thanks for taking the time to do this, man. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yes,
And thanks,
sir.
Rebus.
Oh, yes, yeah. Thanks, Rebus. Appreciate you, buddy. You have a good day.
Too.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.